Hello, and welcome to the Total Mental Performance podcast. My name's Dan. I'm hosting the show today, and I have one of my clients, Adam Glover, with me today. And Adam and I are coming towards the end of our evolution program now. And Adam has a deeply fascinating story, which I am certain will resonate with many, many people who are potentially going through something quite similar, insofar as thought that they had it all figured out regarding the career path which they were heading down. And this is something that I resonate with coming from a sales background. And then something happens along the way which generates an insight deep within the soul of our being, which then completely changes the direction and trajectory of where we are going. And that is an incredibly exciting and beautiful moment, but presents many, many challenges, which Adam is now in the thick of navigating. So it'll be a really interesting conversation to have, going through all the trials and tribulations that come up along the way. Before doing so, Adam, it would be great to just give the listeners a brief overview of who you are and what you are doing right now. So if you could paint a picture of what life looks like in Adam's world right now, what would it look like?
Well, thank you very much for the introduction, Dan. I really appreciate that. As you said, my name is Adam, and I am currently a full-time serving soldier, but also running a nutrition consultation for coaches. My life at the moment, I would suggest, is probably it's about as busy as it can be. If I'm honest, where I'm also a husband and I'm a father, so managing that alongside a challenging day job, a career that I've had for almost 15 years, and then having the passion of my nutrition consultancy and Battleforge Nutrition, and making that work. So for me, that every day is jam-packed. And I'm sure a lot of coaches will say that, but every day genuinely is jam-packed. And you said something very, very early on where you got to a Friday of a week, and you're like, right, I'm satisfyingly fucked. Like that happens a lot now, and then that's something I can, yeah, definitely, it's something I resonate with.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. Doesn't make it easy. It's actually quite
No.
exhausting, to be honest, but it's just like reveling in the exhaustion, knowing that what you have done over the course of that week is going to yield very, very good fruit. So let's take things back to early life for Adam. Adam, as you've just said, has been a serving soldier for how many years?
Almost 15 years.
Almost 15 years. Yeah. So how did that come about?
I joined the army straight away after school. I always knew I wanted to be a soldier. I used to, like everybody is probably, well, most little boys, they play cowboys and Indians with sticks. And I used to steal recruiting books from the library and take them home and stare at like the equipment that the soldiers would have. My nan would buy me the little commando comic books. I Through and through, I always knew I was going to be a soldier. I can't tell you exactly where that came from if I were to put a moment on it, but it was just I knew deep down that I wanted to go into that career. And so, early life, it was a lot of moving around, and parents split up when I was very young. That caused it. So trials and tribulations. But as soon as I finished school, really, I had about 9 months. And then I was straight in the military, and that's been my life from from straight away from very young adulthood to where I am now.
And you've been in various different divisions within the military, is that right?
Yeah, so I joined as a military policeman,
Hmm.
and so I spent the majority part of my career as a military policeman. I've served all over the world. I've served on operational tours in Afghanistan, in other areas in the Middle East, Africa, Europe. And so I've kind of gone all over the world. I've visited pretty much every continent, in my line of work. And then That was initially, as I said, as a military policeman. But then later on in my career, I moved into close protection, which is bodyguarding within the military, where effectively I provide close protection to certain high-ranking officials or, diplomats or people of that ilk. And then that's taken up the last few years of my life in the military. So it's kind of moved away from the policing side of things and more in regards to close protection and how I effectively bodyguard somebody.
I'm fascinated by what it's like to operate from a psychological perspective in those type of environments. How do you manage that in your early days, right? When you first started getting into that line of work, how old were you, first of all? And what was it like from a mindset slash psychological perspective, knowing that actually there's a hell of a lot of responsibility that's rested on your shoulders in those type of situations? What was that like?
I think so. I went into the close protection side of things in my late 20s. And so I'd already had a wealth of experience in the military prior to then. And I always remember when I very first joined the army and I wanted to do close protection training, I was like, yeah, this is the thing I want to do. And I remember a mentor at the time kind of grabbing my reins and pulling me back and saying, no, you do not want to be the person that goes on a close protection mission and the principal, the ambassador, asks you, so what have you done? And you go, I've been through training. So go and get some experience. And that's what I did. I in different areas, and I waited a long time. So by the time I came to, acting in my duties, I had the mentality and I knew what the job would need to be done, and I did it. And so at that point, I think because I was so indoctrinated is not the word, but because I was so used to the missions and the tasks that I've been given over my years in a service, it became like second nature, and it was what needed to be done, and you kind of just accept that.
And something that we've spoken about over the course of our program quite early on, actually, were the challenges that you faced regarding your eyes.
Yeah, that was a big kind of thing.
Would you mind sharing what happened there?
Yeah, so I have a lazy eye. My right eye is lazy, and so what it goes off and does its own thing every now and then. And so it's interesting because whilst it didn't stop me from getting in the military, it stopped me from attempting certain things. And so when I first joined the military, as I said, it's all I wanted to do. I wanted to be a soldier, and I'd always watched movies like Who Dares Wins, and seen members of the SAS climbing up mountains and saving the day. And I thought that's exactly what I want to do. I want to do that. And I remember for such a long time, in the first 3 years of my military career, it's all I could think about. I would go to see former Special Forces soldiers talks. Go and view them and listen to them. I'd read the books. I'd try my best to understand the mindset and what needed to be, because in my opinion, it was the fitness is achievable, right? The fitness is a fitness standard. It's the mindset of whether you have what it takes. And so I've been serving the military for a few years, and I decided, right, okay, let's go. It's time to go. It's time to go and try Special Forces selection. And I believed wholeheartedly that, yeah, I've got what it takes. I need to know, I need to understand, I need to try my absolute best and know whether I have the mental fortitude to go and take on such a challenge. And so I applied. I put in my letter to say, please, can I go on Special Forces selection? And the closest I got to Hereford was the medical center at the end of the street at my military camp. Because as soon as I got to medical center to have the pre-medical checks signed off, the doctor said to me, unfortunately not. You're not allowed to try. And that was really, really frustrating. And because of my eyes, that was the reason why. And it was really frustrating because I was like, no, I must be allowed to try. This is the thing. This is the thing I've attached my entire life to. This is what I want to do. And so I then beat around the bush as much as I could, try and find different ways to get around the system. And make my eyes magically better. And so I ended up going for a laser eye consultation, laser eye surgery consultation. And that developed, and it looked like, okay, cool, laser eye surgery, this could be a thing. And when I went in for a full-on face-to-face consultation with a optometrist, I think that's the word, I think that's what they're called, he told me that I had to have intrusive eye surgery. And that is where, if nobody knows, it's where they cut open part of your eye and put a permanent glass contact lens with moving around the retina to allow your eyes to become better and stronger. Now, not only would that have been a problem for special forces selection, it would have been a problem for my career as a whole, because the army had a blanket ban on intrusive eye surgery because it's a new field. So I remember, very strangely, I was in Shrewsbury High Street, if anybody listens to this has ever been there. And I was with my now wife, and I remember realizing, like, this wave coming over me that I was never going to be allowed to try. To at least try to see whether I had the mental fortitude. Because there's only so many movies I can watch, and only so many books I can read, and only and I remember just absolutely breaking down in tears in the middle of this busy high street, where my entire life's worth of what I believed I was going to be, I wasn't even, I would have accepted it if I'd have tried and failed. I've got a tattoo on my arm that says "Man in the Arena." It's a quote that I try and a passage by Theodore Roosevelt I try and live my life by, and it's about doing your best, and it doesn't matter whether you win or fail. It's about just going and trying. And the fact I wasn't even allowed to try to know whether I had it or not broke me massively. And I wandered for such a long time. I was rudderless. I had nothing. I put on loads of weight. For the first time in my life, I failed a military fitness test, which has never happened since. And it hadn't happened before then. And I had no direction. I didn't know what I was doing. And it was such a hurtful experience, because what was I supposed to do with the information of the person you think you are? You're not a leaver, even allowed to turn up to the start line. And that was very difficult to overcome.
And it's something that I see a lot in coaching clients, because what we're talking about here is a performance-driven individual. A performance is a relative term, and if we just take it as a label, it can be applied in many, many different areas. We can go into sport, we can go into military, we can go into the commercial world. Performance is a pretty broad brush that we can paint over many different types of individual. But what I see quite often are very similar situations to like this. It might be a sporting related incident that happens early on in someone's life. Football is something that's big in British culture, and the vast majority of clients that I work with are from the UK or Ireland or Scotland. And because they're so performance oriented, they often have a early childhood life which contained a lot of sporting activities at a fairly high level. So, see a lot of people who grew up in a football environment, and because they're performance oriented, they pick something that they enjoy and they go, I'm going to give this 110% of my effort. And at the core of their being, they believe that they are going to win. They believe that they are going to make the A team and be the best that they can possibly be. And that's a core belief. They truly do believe that they are going to make that. But then not everybody is good enough. That's an inconvenient truth, right? It's brutal, but it's an inconvenient truth. To get into the upper echelons of the football world, for example, you've got to be seriously, seriously good. And even if you are seriously good, of which many people out there are, there's a big element of luck that comes into the conversation. So as a, early teenager, maybe even before that, who wholeheartedly believes that they are going to make the A team, sticking on the football analogy, to then only be sat on the bench or not make it to the A team like you truly believed that you were, that can be soul destroying, like completely world crushing, because It's like the rug being pulled from beneath our feet. Everything that we thought we would achieve and have is no longer possible. And people can go one of two ways in those moments, right? They can use that kind of dark energy that gets formed from a place of not feeling enough and not feeling worthy to propel them forwards to success. And we see a lot of really, really successful entrepreneurs who build multi-million, sometimes billion-pound empires from a place of dark energy that I'm going to show you and prove you wrong. Or it can go the other way, and that can form addictions and destructive patterns of behavior just to try and medicate the pain. And your example here about feeling rudderless and like you didn't really have a direction is kind of somewhere in the middle, right? It's not full acceptance of fate, because you carried on working, you put the work in, and you were still getting stuff done, just not to the same level and standard that you were before. So what was the moment in which that changed, and where did you find the rudder to get the direction back?
I think it's interesting when it comes to thinking about where my life began to shift and that moment. And it took me a while of beating around a bush to kind of commit to change all the things I was truly interested in. And it kind of, I realized that after a while that I was staying in a career that potentially, well, I was never going to achieve the thing I really wanted to. And potentially it kind of made me a bit resentful towards that, and therefore my effort or my output or how I, the thing I wanted to achieve no longer became important. And I remember, and this is interesting because we haven't actually spoken about this previously, but I approached a coach in end of 2020, start of 2021. And he's now my best friend, a guy called Dean Hammond. And I remember talking to him and saying, "Hi mate, how's it going? I just want to get a little bit stronger. Just want to get a little bit stronger." And at this point, I'd been moving around. I had this idea that I was thinking about nutrition and learning about nutrition and trying to do what I can and kind of understanding nutrition from my own perspective. Like, I just wanted to learn a bit more information. And over the initial conversations about what I was going to do to try and get a little bit stronger, weirdly, kind of landed on this nutrition thing that I'd been in the background, been doing myself, where I'd been doing some education. I'd been following some pipelines down. I just wanted to learn more. And it became a bit of a sticking point. I was like, is this something I'm actually really passionate about? Because it seems like it to me. It seems like this is much more enjoyable to keep doing. I enjoy helping people. Maybe that could be something. I enjoyed learning about nutrition. Weirdly, like a lot of people tend to stick on nutrition as like, yeah, you know, protein, carbs, and fats. Yeah, cheers, easy. See you later. And I geek out about it, and I enjoy it. And it became this thing. And I remember Dean and I talking, where he said, "Adam, obviously you're qualified," because at this point I was qualified as a nutrition coach. And he's like, "You're obviously qualified. Do you mind just having a look at this person and see if you can help?" And so I did. And so I helped out in regards to the, you know, nutritionally and what was, you know, what the person was struggling with. And I gave some tips and I provided a bit of a direction. And I thought, this is really good. And then before I know it, it began to snowball. But then a seismic shock came to me. Like, it was like a bolt of lightning. I'd started doing this for Dean quite a lot. And he said to me, he said, "Adam, I want to tell you something." I was like, "Okay." It's like, "You've given me a day with my children that I didn't have before because you're handling the nutrition stuff within my business." And I was like, excuse my French, but holy shit. Like, this is, and it was like a bolt of lightning. I was like, this is the thing. This is, I could imagine all the people I could help doing this. Imagine I could help clients. I could, you know, get them nutritional results that I really want to give them, and I want to help them achieve change, because that's something that I had gone through where I wanted to get back into a good shape. But hearing a coach who's struggling to do it all, like me now, being able to help that, to give him time with his family, to live that life he wants to live, I knew straight away, I was like, this is it. This is the thing, because I can truly help people here. And it became very quickly my center of the thing I wanted to do, the thing I wanted to be known for. And we spoke about this very briefly at the very beginning of our journey, but it was like a little sapling, a little acorn sapling coming out of the ground. And it was very fragile, and it was a little, a gust of wind could blow it over. But I saw the potential in that idea there, and then I was like, let's go. Let's go.
Yeah. It gives me the shivers, makes the hairs on my arms and back of my neck stand up, because what we're talking about here is ikigai.
Yeah.
Your reason for being. So for those who are listening back to this and haven't heard of ikigai before, I strongly recommend you go and look it up. It's a Japanese concept, which essentially means a reason for being. And if you can imagine a Venn diagram consisting of four circles, at each corner of those circles, we have a different message. The first message is what you love. So pretty simple and self-explanatory. It's doing something that you love to do. The second is what the world needs. The third is what you can be paid for. And the fourth is what you are good at. Now, at most point in pretty much everybody's life, when they go to work, traditionally in a 9-5, they will be hovering at maybe one, maybe two, maybe three, and if they're lucky, all four of these quadrants. If you achieve all four of these quadrants, then you'll have this Japanese concept of ikigai, which is a very magical and almost whimsical place to be, because that is this elusive meaning and purpose that we talk about a lot at TMP, and it's really not an easy thing to obtain. Most people go to work because they have to. We have debts, we have a mortgage, we have families to provide for, and that is purposeful in itself. But going to work and earning money because we have to is very different to going to work because we love what we do and the world needs what we do, and we can provide genuine value in the process of doing it. And in obtaining ikigai for yourself, that was the rudder going back into the water, right?
Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you use that word ikigai, and because that's something I said to Dean very quickly. I was very aware of it, and I was like, now this is the purpose. This is the thing. I mean, you've spoken to me enough now that you know I'm a bit mad on quotes and a bit mad on things. So when I hear stuff and it resonates, I'm like, okay, that's cool. And that's something that means something. And yeah, it was in that moment. And since that point, yeah, it's been incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was 2021.
2022 by the time that realization happened.
2022. Okay. And what's going on for Adam psychologically at that point, knowing that he's committed to a long-term career in the army? And as I've now learned, as a result of working with you quite intimately, there is a legal obligation for you to stay there.
Yeah. At that moment, I could feel I was being pulled in two different directions. And there was the version of Adam that wanted to be a special forces soldier and test himself in the harshest violence of the world, to be that person, to test, like, to know his mental robustness. And that person did what was needed to be done every day and turned up. And we have a saying called taking the queen shilling, or king shilling now. Like, that's what you did. And that version of Adam was still present. And he was still there, and he was still asking a lot of me, because at that time I thought I could do both. At that time, I was like, yeah, this is great. Everyone could do it. I could do this. It's fine. But the real me had come to the fore. He turned up and he, in no uncertain terms, he kicked open the door and said, I'm here now. This is what you want. You know it to be true. What are you waiting for? And the reality is, I think I'm proud of what I've done in the military. I'm very happy and proud of the service I've given and very content with the experiences I've had. I don't hate it. But I knew that I'd found the thing that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I think it's very easy to understate how important that is, because a lot of coaches, they are fortunate and they find it very quickly. And they go on and change people's lives very quickly. And they could be relatively young and have massive impact. But when you've committed so long to another thing, like yourself in sales, for then something else to come left field in whatever guise it comes at you at, you've got to stand up and listen. Because those opportunities, that moment doesn't happen every so often. It doesn't happen all the time. It maybe happens once. It maybe is a shot across the bow. I'm using far too many naval analogies here for a person who's in the army, but maybe that's what it was. And I kidded myself for a while, thinking I could do both. Really did. And I struggled with that. Struggled with that. Yes, but I should be the soldier, but no, I should be the coach. And I was like, how do I do both? And I looked at people who really inspired me, and I was like, how are they doing these things? What do I need to do? And how does it work? And adding my family and adding all that and being the role model and the support network to my wife and my daughter to be that person that I'd always wanted from my parents and how I wanted to. And I was like, this, how am I ever going to do all this? And I mean, we all know probably that wasn't going to be a success long term. So things have happened. But yeah, at that moment in time, I probably wasn't ready to admit that it was time to take off one hat and put on another.
But you did. And in doing so, you hit a new level, because making that conscious decision to go all in on your passion, the thing that you are emotionally invested in, we encounter new devils. So we have a phrase at TMB, which you will have heard, no doubt, new levels, new devils. So in making that commitment, saying, I'm going to leave this career that I put so many years and energy into behind in favor of what I know my soul is calling me to do, you encountered some limiting factors within your psyche, which is where the TMP relationship comes in, right? So what was it above all else that inspired you to raise your hand and ask for support from me and TMP?
When I first heard of TMP, I was at a supercharged event run by Ollie Carson. Anyone who's listened to this knows the caliber of the man. And here is this was in 2022, actually. Yeah, 2022. And Kieran spoke. And to this day, it brings the hairs on the back of my neck to edge. I was like, it stands him up. And I'm like, this is insane. Like this dude knows exactly what I'm feeling and he understands it. And then I just, every time I saw TMP or I had the ability to, talk to you or listen to a podcast or whatever, maybe I was there. I was like, okay, cool. Do the work, do the deep work that needs to be done. 'Cause I knew at some point I was going to have to take a step. It wasn't, oh, maybe I'll do that now. No, I was like, no, I know that if I want to unlock the next level of performance that I'm trying to do in whatever guise, TMP is a no-brainer for me. It has to happen. And it was interesting because last year I was at the lock-in event in Manchester, which was incredible. Such a cool venue. Awesome. Like just and I knew I I'd met you properly then, and I mean, ginger color together, like obviously that's a thing. We've got to stick together. We're dying breed, so. But I knew I resonated with you straight away, and I knew hearing you talk, because I heard, in fact, I heard you talk at the when I saw it. Yeah, let's go back, the March event in December, and I heard you talk there, and then we had a conversation afterwards, and I was just like, yeah, this is an obvious step. This is an obvious step for me, and I just, yeah, I after that locking event, it kind of sold it for me. I was like, right, stop waiting for the perfect time, because it ain't gonna exist. Do the D word now, put up your hand, say, hello, can someone listen to what I've got to say? And then, you know, and we go from there. And that, it was a empowering experience. Like the moment I reached out, I was like, I'm taking control here. I'm taking control of my future because I'm deciding to do this when I'm ready. And, or I'm, it's not about when I'm ready. I was like, I'm deciding to do this. It doesn't matter. And yeah, that was like that moment. It just kind of became a thing. I was like, this is what I'm doing now. And that's great.
Yeah, and here we are. So, what would you say has been the biggest light bulb moment for you over the course of our working relationship?
So it's interesting because we unpacked really quickly and we generated momentum really quickly. There are things that we've spoken about that have, like, for example, the death of my father. I've never looked on that process or that, sorry, that not process. I've never looked on that event as anything other than negative, ever. It's not, I've not been able to do it. It's just not possible. But now, all I do is I think positively about it. I smile when I think about him. I see the color yellow everywhere, which is obviously a thing between us, but it's everywhere. And stuff that I couldn't do before, I can do now. I can think about him in a much more positive way, and I understand the man he was. And that was huge. Like, I can't, I'd maybe I've not done that justice, but it was massive. It was a immediate paradigm shift from before talking about it, never being able to think of it positively, to after talking about it, a massive, it's not even a light bulb, Dan. Like, I don't know. It's like someone switched the lights on. Like, and I was like, oh, okay, this is what it is. And I remember, because one of the things we do is I go for a walk after every call I have with you, just to let things be rather than bombard myself with other events. And on that walk, I listened to a song I've not been able to listen to a whole way through. And it was a song my father chose that he wanted me to listen to after he died. And I was able to listen to it, and the whole time I was smiling. The whole time I was smiling. And I realized there, I was like, this is the work. This is the things that have been holding me back, whether it be in my military career, whether it be in the past I've had, whatever it may be. It's been my own belief system that has held it back. So what else am I holding myself back from by believing this way? And it kind of was like a dam bursting. I was like, okay, now let's go.
Such an empowering story, because what we're talking about here is a core belief, right? In your case, I actually think it goes deeper than beliefs. You know, we have our state of being in different layers. We kind of have our presenting behavior, which is being driven by emotion, which is being driven by a thought. That thought will be driven by some kind of belief. And a belief is formed as a result of a wound, a core wound. And beliefs are the low-hanging fruit of personal change. We all have them. They make up our operating system and they create the lens through which we view reality. But to go a layer deeper than that and provide genuinely life-changing levels of change, we work at the core wound level. Now, it's hard work. It's not easy to do, but deep work isn't easy. It's speaking to that lost, lonely, sad inner child that we have deep within us, who, for the most part, in most people's cases, has been locked away and suppressed. Even though they're in there screaming and kicking, give me some fucking attention. I'm in here. I need something from you. And you were able to tap into that and form a relationship with that little guy who just needed some support and needed some love. So what was the shift for you? Like, what was the reframe? I mean, we know that it went from, you know, like debilitating grief and suppressing of this event to lightness and happiness. What was the actual shift that happened inside your mind?
I think when it comes to my father, I had always viewed everything he had said to me in the lead up to his death as lies he told me, and he was never truthful and he was never honest. And in turn, that led into my own guilt about the way I acted towards him as an 18-year-old boy. Like, I wasn't a man, regardless of being 18. And I had acted in a way that only I could deal with at that situation at that time. And I was watching the man die. And to compound that feeling of that anger, of that guilt, of that shame — shame is the word we worked on — of how I was acting, I looked for any, and have continuously looked for any excuse to make it something that I didn't have to deal with. That shame wasn't shame at all. It was someone else. It was something else. It wasn't. But when we unpacked where that came from and how it kind of happened, there was one event that the shame was attached to, where I had mistaken, well, I tried to make it about it's his fault, it's not my fault. But in reality, the situation was two people acting in the only way they knew how to protect the other. And that was really difficult to say. It was really difficult to accept, because I had never wanted to accept any sort of feeling of it was him or it was my stepmother or whatever. I had to accept that it was their fault or whatever. It had nothing to do with me. And this feeling that had kind of manifested over time was a protective barrier of me not accepting that. Do you know what? I did feel shame at the time. I didn't react in the way that I wanted to, because hindsight's a brilliant thing, but I could only deal with what I could deal with then, in there, in that moment. But that doesn't change the fact, in those final days, he was incredibly proud of me. I just didn't want to see it, because I wanted to grieve and I wanted to feel bad and I wanted to blame somebody else and I wanted to be angry. And that's what continually led my adult life. I was never able to let go of that anger, that grief, that guilt, that shame, to accept that he was very proud of who I am or who I was. And now, proud wouldn't even cover how he'd feel. And that was that shift of accepting the shame for what it was and processing the emotion, allowed me to move past it and view it in a positive way. Because if I didn't accept the way I felt at the time, I never would have been able to look at it positively.
So it made space for pride.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And what difference has that made to how you operate and perform now?
Everything. And I'm not saying that flippantly for people who listen. I'm not just saying that for a soundbite. I mean it, because that was one of the first dominoes that fell. And it led to the last domino falling, which is I'm ready to go after this business that I've created. I'm ready to make this the thing, my purpose full time. This is what I want. And the whole, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be in this position now. I wouldn't be the person who's handed in his notice in the army and ready to go, ready to push on and crack on and build, because I wouldn't have been able to understand the emotion I was feeling. And it enabled me to compartmentalize, right? This is the time. This is now. This is your opportunity. And I said this to you when we spoke about me leaving the army, is that this is the moment, which I'll look back in 15 years as the moment, the one that changed everything. Like when I went all in, and that this was the thing, and this is how it's happened, because I was able to take that step. Because if I hadn't committed to it, it never would have grown, and it never would have become what it will become in all the years' time. But when we go back to the domino that fell, the reframing of how I envisage that life event had to happen, because I never would have been able to make this decision.
It's a big year this year.
Massive. Biggest
Yeah.
of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest challenge that we've got now, which we are continually managing, is energy. Because as you introduced at the beginning of the podcast, there's a lot going on in your world right now. There's a few different plates which are being spun at all times, and it's just about managing that energy effectively so that we don't push too hard too soon. But you're doing a great job of that as well. I think once we shift a lot of the emotional baggage that we've been carrying around, thinking consciously becomes a lot easier. Everything becomes a lot more clear. We're able to understand our emotions, our thoughts, and the way in which we approach work in a totally different way, because it's not balls to the wall all the time. It's understanding that we do need downtime. Somebody like yourself who has a family, that time is absolutely crucial, because if we don't have that, then we've really got nothing. So, what does the future look like? What if
Awesome.
we do? We were to go out to the 1st of February 2024, a year from now, what's life going to be like for Adam then?
Well, the 1st of February 2025 next year, I will be out of the army. That's happened now. Like, my year's notice is in. So it will be this. Business is everything I do. It's living a life of purpose, not on my own, because I have an incredible support network around me. Like, and that's something I'm very aware of, is that this will be a success. I have actually no doubt, like, because it has to be. Because it's my effort and it's my interaction and it's my input every day. So therefore it will be a success, because it just has to happen that way. But I know that with the people around me, Dean, Ollie, Alex, all of yourself, all the TMP crew, all the suit, like, I spend my days around incredible people. And that's only going to grow, because that's all. When I'm out of the military and this is all I do full time, I say all I do like it's a small thing, but this is what I do full time. My days will be spent consistently around these incredible people who support you and help you and want you to succeed, which, as we've spoken about before, is something new to me. So it's a new feeling. But the next after, so when 2025, it's the beginning of the rest of my life. It's where I live for me and the person that I have been. I get to close that chapter. The book's still on the shelf. It's still there, and I'm not throwing it away. I'm not setting it on fire. It's still there. But I can open it and read it every now and go, oh, that was good, wasn't it? But the chapter's closed because the next 15, 20 chapters are going to be aligned to who I truly want to be. And I'm doing it surrounded by people who inspire the fuck out of me. And it's I can't understate that. How much of a it's make like see, I probably hear it in my voice how much I'm smiling right now because that is everything. To be part of a community of people who want you to succeed and want you to do well and are there to support and you help them and you support them whilst all striving to achieve the goals that you want for business and the impact you want to have. That impact you will have because you're surrounded by those people. And that's, yeah, it's something that I'm going to enjoy every single second of.
And I am too. As somebody who's in your corner, I can't wait to see what the future looks like for you because the foundation is so solid now. Building mode. Let's get it. Well, look, I think that's a great place to wrap up the pod today. This has been a deeply fulfilling and enjoyable conversation, and it's had me on the edge of my seat the whole time. Even as the host, it's such an inspiring journey, such an inspiring story, and it's been my honor to stand shoulder to shoulder with you and coach you through what is undoubtedly going to be the most transformational period of your life. So, where can people find you to follow your story and see how Battleforged progresses?
I have an Instagram page at Battleforge Nutrition. Head over there to see me talk about nutrition in a way that hopefully makes sense to people and cuts through some BS. I'm sure you'll see me at events and I'm part of incredible teams, the Catalyst Project, Supercharged. Obviously, I'm a member in there as well, and all of the great people I work with. So no doubt if you spend some time with good coaches, I'll probably be there or thereabouts at some point.
Yeah, amazing. And just so people don't get mixed up, your business name is Battle with the number four, right?
No. So
Oh, it's
that
not.
was part of the rebrand because that was really confusing. Yeah,
Got
because
it.
I realized that, hold on, why are you doing that? That's a bit strange. No, my Instagram account is all one word, Battle Forged Nutrition.
Got it. Wanted to make sure that people could actually find you. Final question for you, Adam. We always finish up the podcast, and you'll probably know this having listened to many of them in the past. What does total mental performance mean to you?
This is going to sound so cheesy. Love. Love. For me, total mental performance is love. Love what you do, who you do it with, and how you do it. That's everything.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that. Adam, thank you so much. This has been amazing. Thank you to everybody who's listened. Infinite love to you all. See you again soon.
See you soon.
So that's us for today, team. I want to say a huge thank you for spending this portion of your life listening to us. A couple of things before you disappear. If you're not already following us on Instagram, you can find all of our daily content on mindset and hitting peak performance at Total Mental Performance or our website, www.totalmentalperformance.com. If you haven't already, please subscribe. You'll find us on Spotify, the Apple Podcasts, and all the other various different platforms. Big love. Thank you ever so much. And we're looking forward to speaking with you soon.